All rise. Court is in session. Call now 215-263-1079. Court Radio 107.9 WRNB is on. Brought to you exclusively by the law offices of Silvers, Langsam, and Weitzman, better known as MyPhillyLawyer.com.
Good morning, Philadelphia. This is Dean Weitzman, better known as My Philly Lawyer, coming at you for another exciting episode of Court Radio. And joined this morning, this rainy Sunday morning, with my co-host and trusted assistant, David Rappaport and Tiffany Bacon. Good morning, Tiffany.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well, thanks.
Fantastic. This is Court Radio on 107.9 WRNB. If you would like to have a legal question answered this morning, now would be the time to give us a call. Simply dial 215-263-1079. That'll put you right into the studio. We are Court Radio. Hey guys, so what's happening?
So what's up, Dean? What is the what tickled your fancy this weekend?
Well, let's see. Yesterday I had a really great day. I was in New Jersey. Yes, I took...
Oh, wait, you were in New Jersey? Did you get attacked?
Lord. I took the trip over for a very good cause.
After what you said last week?
I was the master of ceremonies for the Bread of Life Foundation's annual luncheon. It's a really great organization. I helped develop, or I should say incorporate, back in 2003, and it's run by a cancer survivor, Lil Daniels, and Lil survived breast cancer, and she's now 6 years in remission. And when she was sick, she said, "You know, Dean, I'm going to help people that have this disease once I survive." And she was always very positive. And 9 months later, to the day after she began her chemo, she was in my office with her husband Solomon, and we incorporated as a nonprofit organization, the Bread of Life, and it's really taken off since then. They've grown by leaps and bounds, and every nickel they raise goes to helping people in and around Burlington County, New Jersey, who suffer with various chronic illnesses, especially cancer, but also diabetes and other illnesses. And they're about education, early detection, and assisting those who suffer with the disease. And so year in and year out, the My Philly Lawyer continues to support that organization. And it really is the type of volunteerism that Obama talked about, because nobody gets any money. The administration of the organization is completely volunteer, and every penny they raise goes to helping people who need it, most definitely.
Very nice.
Yeah, so it was kind awesome.
Sounds like you definitely redeemed yourself from the New Jersey.
There's good, but listen, we still have to wonder about this whole Corzine and Christie race. I mean,
couldn't hold back.
Never will he hold back.
Well, Christie, you know, he's one burger short of a Happy Meal. I mean, you know, his last commercial was unbelievable.
I think he's had several Happy Meals, actually. But boom.
Yeah. He's talking about Corzine raising taxes. I mean, did he just come out from under a rock? We're in the worst recession since 1930 something. You know, everybody's raising taxes. They're looking for reasons to get money from wherever. You know, let's tax gas, let's tax pencils. I mean, you know, whatever they can tax, they're taxing, because you know, the landscape has changed.
Right.
And so, but what does he do? He goes to that silly common denominator. Does it really work?
It does, actually. People hear taxes and they go, "Oh my God, you can't raise tax." Well, you know, that's been the mantra of the conservatives, you know, the Republican Party forever. Taxes. Everyone runs on the "I will not raise taxes."
I don't believe that. I was with a whole lot of smart people from New Jersey yesterday. I refuse to believe that they are going to fall for that nonsense. This is just, you know, another one. And I said to them, you know, if those fellas, and Corzine's just as bad, if they took some of the money that they dumped into all that advertising
into
the Bread of Life Foundation or any other good organization, we would change the world. You know?
See, but Jersey also suffers. I think they have the highest property taxes. You know, the residents of Jersey have some beef you know, legitimate beefs to air. They've always had the highest property taxes, I think, for a while. And and high tax, too, just the tax rate. So.
As far as I'm concerned, Christie's as sharp as a marble.
Yeah, well, I got you.
I mean,
you're preaching to the choir on that one, my friend.
You know, whatever.
Unbelievable.
All right.
You're listening to Court Radio on 107.9 WRNB, brought to you by the law offices of Silvers, Langsam, and Weitzman, better known as MyPhillyLawyer.com. Give us a call and ask your legal question right now, 215-263-1079. And we have a special guest in the studio.
We do. We do. We have a new, our newest My Philly Lawyer, William Hobson, joined the staff of My Philly Lawyer. How long's it been, Bill?
I started working for you, Dean, in May.
In May.
May of this year.
You know, and one of the things that Bill is doing is he's volunteering some of his time. Speaking of volunteerism, that must be the hot button topic of this show today. He's volunteering some of his time to the fairly new Pennsylvania Innocence Project. So we're going to talk today about the Innocence Project and what it is all about, what it's out there to do, what it's accomplished up till now. And Bill's taken some courses with them and is getting ready to begin to represent some individuals who perhaps are in jail for no good reason at all. And so we're going to talk about that. But before we get into the hot-button topic of the day, we got to give good wishes and send out our best wishes to our Fightin' Phils, who had a little trouble with the second game.
Well,
a little bit of a disappointment,
we were
David.
Questioning the pitching. Why did we take out a pitcher who was doing really well?
And Pedro?
Yeah, we took him out. Manuel took him out, what was it, in the sixth inning or seventh inning? And then we had to go through five pitchers to try and save the game. And he was pitching great.
Right.
So that was the question that everyone had. I guess there's some rhyme or reason to it. I'm not a manager of a baseball team, so I don't know.
Yeah, and he's done a pretty darn good job up till now.
Yeah,
so,
oh, absolutely.
You know, but and I have to, I feel bad, actually. You know, I'm not hating on him at all. I feel bad for Chase Utley.
Yeah.
I mean, this
yeah.
is the hey. Consummate professional, and he has...
anyone can make an error. I mean, come on.
Critical.
Two errors. Bill's holding up at two. Not one error, two errors.
Yeah, okay. But you know what? Before they left for L.A., we would have been happy had they come back winning one game, because it brings...
Right.
the home field advantage back to Philadelphia.
Yes.
And they accomplished that. I mean, of course, if they had swept them out there, it would have been, you know, phenomenal. But
right.
but to have taken a game in L.A. was all they needed to do, and they did it. They're coming back. They got three games here. Bing, bang, boom. Mm-hmm. We can be celebrating on Wednesday. I'll be at that game for my Phils.
Right now.
Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah,
right.
It's good. There's no, hey, no worries right now. We are totally positive and ready to go.
I'll tell you though, those Yankees look good.
The Yankees do look good.
They're something else.
That'll be a great series if it's the Phillies and the Yankees. It definitely will.
Absolutely. Before we get into anything, just to let you know, we do have a call on the line. If you're ready to tackle a question,
What do they call? By the way, just so that we are all on the same page, what number do they call to get us again?
215-263-1079. That's how you can reach us to ask your legal question. We have an anonymous caller calling in from Philadelphia. Uh-huh. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to know. I work in a halfway house. And I got exposed to TB. I don't have it, but I have to take the medication for 9 months, but I still can catch it. Do I have a legal issue here so I can sue my employer?
Probably not. You can sue your employer when you're injured or it's been extended to the transmission of a disease that you received at work. But only if the transmission of that disease or that injury prevents you from doing your job. Because what workers' compensation does is it compensates you for your inability to work. It does not compensate you for pain and suffering. That is a right that we have against third parties that we've given up against our employer. So the answer is, as long as the disease isn't affecting your ability to work, you don't have a cause of action against your employer, but should that that disease create a situation where you can't work, and we hope that doesn't happen, then you would have a claim for your lost wages.
Okay.
All right. Have a great Sunday, and thanks for calling Court Radio.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right.
You know, right across the hot wire today, a judge in New Orleans, I don't know if I pronounced that right, New Orleans.
New Orleans is really how. Yeah, you got it.
New Orleans might come up. Might take New Jersey out of the running for the goofiest state this month. A judge refused to marry an interracial couple.
Oh yeah, I heard that.
Oh,
okay. What year is this?
What year is this?
Yeah, what was his reasoning? He had a reason for it. He just said, "I'm not saying you can't. I just don't want to do it," or something like that.
He said the children will be stigmatized from this union.
Idiot.
Yeah.
Mm.
So
We're
going to name him because you know idiots should be named, and his name is Bardwell. Bardwell, Judge Bardwell in New Orleans. So if you're down in New Orleans, make sure that you steer clear of Judge Bardwell.
Justice of the Peace, I think he was or is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What peace was
or
he?
Shouldn't be.
Yeah.
No peace there.
Yeah, what peace?
Judge Bardwell's a few pecans short of a fruitcake.
Well, you got he's got a couple. What was he?
Everybody's a few something.
Few pecans short of a fruitcake. What was the one you just said before? A sharp as a marble. Oops. And what was you had one more?
A hamburger short of a
happy There you meal. Go. One hamburger. Boy, you're happy full meal. Of a happy meal. Yeah, you're full of these little sayings.
Well, listen, I am above calling people derogatory comments. I think that if we're going to mock somebody, we should do it with a smile on our face.
Okay.
He may have been educated under the civil standards of the grand state of Louisiana. The legal term was miscegenation, which made it illegal for interracial marriage.
Yes.
And certain states, the Supreme Court didn't rule on that until 1956.
Wow.
Yeah. So what you're saying then, Bill, is since 1956.
Up until.
It's for 53 years, it's been the law of the land that there is no state that forbids or can forbid. Yeah. The union of an interracial couple.
Someone didn't tell Judge
Bardwell.
Bardwell, yeah.
So we go back to my original statement. He's a few pecans short of a fruitcake.
Wow, sounds like a whole fruitcake.
Yeah, really. I don't think he has any fruitcake.
All right, let's move on, folks. Let's move on to the Innocence Project, and our phone lines are whacking up here. So we'll take a call, maybe.
All right. Yes, we have Melody calling in from Philadelphia. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning. Good morning.
How are you?
Hi, Melody.
Hi, everyone.
We're doing well.
What's your question?
I've been working on my job for 18 years. I've been promoted in 2000, and I'm now 9 years into my new position. Someone came from a different department now making more money than me, and it's been going on for maybe a little over 4 or 5 years. I went through my union, and nothing was done. No paperwork, no proof of why I can't get my rate the way it's supposed to be. I was just wondering, is it too late to pursue this another way? I mean, it's been going on for some time now, and I'm not sitting easy with it because this guy is making more money than me, and I was there way before him, and it's based on seniority.
Okay, well, the answer is that to a large extent, the contract controls. Your union contract is controlling, and you have to exhaust the remedies in that contract. But however, once you've exhausted those remedies, you may be eligible to file a complaint with the EEOC, and the Equal Employment Opportunity Council, and there we can get you their telephone number. They certainly are available on the web, but I have some people working on that. Continue to listen. And you may want to file an EEOC complaint. You also may want to speak with an attorney if you haven't done so already.
No, I haven't.
Okay. And you can certainly listen to the remainder of the show and give us a call tomorrow or Tuesday, and we will hook you up with somebody who can provide you with some advice and counsel regarding this problem.
Great.
All right.
What you're saying is not too late. Great.
It is not too late because it's an ongoing problem, right? Mm-hmm. Each time that you get paid less than this guy, it's not something which has an end date. As long as the potential discrimination it continues to occur.
Okay.
All right. Have a great day. Thanks
for
calling Court Radio.
All right. Bye-bye. This is Court Radio on 107.9 WRNB. We welcome your phone calls at 215-263-1079. We have a few more calls, Dean, if you want to take a few or get into our hot button topic.
We'll take some more.
Wait, right. Before, one quick thing. I don't think we're going to be able to give a number for the EEOC because it's when you go to their website, it tells you to contact the local field office, and there's a lot of local field offices. So, unfortunately, I think you'll have to go to the internet, find the local field office where you're located, and contact them. Sorry, we couldn't be of more help on that, but
or call my Philly local.
Or yeah, well, sure, we could find out if we know what your local area is.
All right.
All right, fantastic. Ahead. We have Michael calling in. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Hello, this is Michael. My question concerning my Philly lawyer, but no holding back on our Philadelphia lawyer per se. I want to know, why is it much easier to file a claim in malpractice opposed to attorney malpractice?
Okay, so I think, Michael, what you're saying is your perception is it's easier to file a malpractice claim against a doctor than it is an attorney?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I don't think that's the case, but I will tell you that there is a distinct difference, and that is when a doctor commits malpractice, it's a direct action, and you need to prove that his behavior was a breach of the standard of care, that breach caused an injury. When an attorney commits malpractice, you have to prove two cases. You have to prove that had the attorney done what he was supposed to do, you would have been successful on the underlying case. So, for instance, if let's say, for instance, you rear-end another individual.
Well, can I give you my instance case for example? It's been going on for 33 years now, and I'm having trouble with getting the right representation. Well, they really don't want to go up against attorneys.
Hold on one second, Michael.
Michael, you can certainly give us a call at the office to discuss your individual case.
Well, no, I'm not going into detail. I'm just dealing with mandatory language and practice issues.
Okay, well, I'm going to answer your first question, which is why is it more difficult, and I'm going to tell you that it's more difficult to some extent because in an attorney case you have to prove two cases. One is the underlying case that you originally brought to the attorney. You have to prove that you would have been successful on that case, because if an attorney makes a mistake, but that mistake really didn't materially change your circumstances. In other words, if you brought an attorney a losing case to begin with and the attorney makes a mistake, that mistake isn't going to be compensable because you would have lost the underlying case anyway. So you have to prove the underlying case first and then that the attorney made a mistake which caused you to lose that case. So it's kind of proving two things. And to that extent, perhaps maybe your perception is correct that it's a little bit more difficult. Mm-hmm. But thanks, Michael, for calling Court Radio. And if you want to talk about your individual case, by all means, give us a call in the office tomorrow, and we'll be happy to discuss it at length. Thanks, and have a great day.
All right. Thank you so much. We have Christine calling in from New Jersey. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing fine. Thank you.
Hi, Christine.
I was just wondering, I have been battling just a legal issue as far as me getting burned in an apartment and having an infestation of bed bugs in my apartment. I've been to court on numerous occasions, and I was also ruled, but now I'm having still the same issue. And as of Thursday, they will be trying to take me back to court for a warrant of hability with the complex that I live in. Now, is that legal, or would I just still have to be leave the premises even if I'm still having this issue?
Well, are you paying rent, or have you withheld your rent?
I withheld my rent.
Okay.
Well, I had went to court before, which was May through August. We went to court for the warrant of hability, and then somehow or another some funky stuff happened within that thing, because I had talked to the health department, the building inspectors, and things like that, and when we went to court, none of that stuff was presented in court. They showed that I had a burn on my arm from my stove blowing up and all of that, but when it came down to the judge ruling, he only ruled 20%, 20%, 6% for the February. For March and April. May and June and July and August, he gave me 10% for bed bugs. But that shouldn't have been because I'm still having the problem. So I withheld for September and October. And on October the 22nd, I'll be going back to court.
Okay. Did they? When you withheld the second time, they filed against you and they're trying to get you out, right?
Yeah, now they've been trying to get me out ever since I've been here, ever since the fire happened.
Hold on one second.
Let me try and answer your question. First of all, do you have an attorney?
She's been brought down.
Okay.
She was brought down.
Assuming you don't have an attorney. If you don't, you should definitely get one. But I think the bottom line is this. The habitability issue is a double-edged sword in a way, because if you have the Department of Health involved and they determine it to be inhabitable, they may actually not let you live there anymore. So, Go ahead, Dean.
The things that come to mind to me are, number one, if you're alleging that your place is inhabitable,
right,
then you're not living there. Mm-hmm. You're living with your mom, your grandmom, somebody else, because it's not habitable.
Right, you can't.
And
live
then the judge would give you. He'd say, okay, you don't have to pay your rent because the place is not habitable. If you're in fact living there, this judge played Solomon and he said, okay, you know, part of the what you bargained for, part of what you were renting was not appropriate, so we're going to cut the rent down, and that's what he did. But two things. Number one, go with an attorney. Number two, if you're not paying your rent, put it in escrow. That way the court knows that you're serious, that it's not just that you don't want to pay, but...
Yeah, you have to be careful when you don't pay rent, because you can't just do it and not notify the landlord and like you said, put it in escrow.
Have counsel, put it in escrow, and if it truly is not habitable, then get out and live somewhere else. But if you're living there... Then you're going to end up paying something.
There'll be an assumption that it's somewhat habitable.
Somewhat.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, have a great day. Best of luck on the 22nd. But if you're going to argue that the place is not habitable, then get out. And move in with somebody else. But if you're going to live there, they're going to charge you some portion of that rent. If you've got bills, medical bills from the bed bugs and you can show that, bring it with. They'll deduct that as well, probably from your rent, to make you whole. That's the best I could tell you today.
I'm also not sure bed bugs is an issue that a landlord might be able to argue isn't his or her fault. I mean, bed bugs is a cleanliness issue, and I'm not suggesting that the person isn't cleanly or anything like that, but it isn't like a mold or a leaky faucet or something like that.
What if you could prove that your neighbors have bed bugs as well? Then you might prove that the entire apartment complex is infested.
But
with
you
them.
Just said the whole thing there. What if you can prove? You have to prove. That's the whole point. Well, you got to prove.
You always have to prove.
Yeah.
But,
mm-hmm.
You know. All right.
You are listening to Court Radio on 107.9 WRNB. Now, if you're sitting back and you're wondering what to do if you or someone close to you are involved in an automobile accident, a slip and fall, personal injury, or medical malpractice, contact the law offices of Silvers, Langsam & Weitzman, the home of My Philly Lawyer. With over 100 years of combined experience, they will aggressively fight for you. Call now for your free personal consultation, or rather tomorrow call them for your free personal consultation. And remember, they don't get paid until you get paid. For answers to those questions and more, simply call 215-227-2727. Tomorrow morning, call 215-227-2727 or visit them online at myphillylawyer.com. Can't wait till tomorrow. Call us right now, 215-263-1079. We have Jerry on the line from Elkins Park. Let's hear from him. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Yes, hello.
Good morning.
Hello.
Hi, Jerry. What can we do for you this morning?
Okay, I have a question concerning a domestic issue. In a nutshell, I have a lady that was angry over a failed relationship, and so in retaliation, she's gone out and filed frivolous protection from abuse orders against me. And both times they were thrown out by the judge. You know, it was completely outrageous, in fact. But I tried to do some research, and people are telling me that it's her right to be able to file these. And she just walks out of court without, nothing happens to her. You know, she just leaves out, and they say she can file another one. So I'm trying to figure out what am I able to do to protect myself and also to possibly even retaliate.
Nothing. I'll give you the first thing you should do. Just protection from abuse is usually stay away. So stay away from her. You can anyone can file a protection from abuse, and unfortunately or unfortunately, the court is very relaxed in first granting a temporary order because they want to make sure a person's protected. So they don't go into much investigation. They just give a temporary order. But then you have a hearing. And like you said, you had two hearings and they were thrown out because obviously she wasn't able to prove that you were abusing her or in danger of her. But she still has a right to file it. Just stay away from her. That's all.
Well, may I ask this other question? Bring up another point.
Go ahead.
I have no contact with her at all, and I had not seen her for even, say, like 2 months. And I was away for training for my job, employment.
Right.
And she actually went back to court the second time and claimed that she was living there and that all these abuses occurred, which, of course, got tossed out because I wasn't even here.
And
I had to leave my own home for a week.
Hold on, Jerry.
All right, Jerry.
Well, now you got a different issue, so go ahead.
I think that you've made a case for filing a false or fraudulent report with authorities, and I think that that's, you know, clearly if she made statements which were not true to the police in order to affect this process to essentially harass you, then I think that you might get somebody interested because the court shouldn't be used by people or abused by people for the purpose of harassing another individual.
Right.
So, go to the local police station and bring your evidence and see if they'll file a criminal complaint against her for filing a false police report.
I think abusive process, you might be able civilly, actually, if you have proof, you could sue her civilly for abusive process. If it caused you damage, like...
missed days at work.
Right, having to pay a lawyer to defend you, all these things.
So from a criminal side, if you can get the government interested, they might file a criminal complaint against her for filing a false report. And on the civil side, as David said, you can file a complaint for abuse of process and get civil damages. And so there are some avenues you have, but you'll have to, it's going to take some effort on your part to undertake those.
And I said nothing initially because you need evidence, obviously, to do all these things. So gather it up first before you decide to jump into proactively doing something.
All right, Jerry, thank you so much. I hope we were able to help you this morning.
Yes, you were. Thank you very much.
All right. Fantastic.
Jerry from Elkins Park. All right. Let's move on to the Innocence Project, isn't
he? Absolutely.
Yes.
Mr. Hobson's been waiting here, gathering his evidence as a good lawyer would do. I have to say that this came to my mind today to do the show today because I was reading a story, a phenomenal story about Betty Ann Waters. And she is a remarkable woman. Betty Ann Waters' brother, Kenny Waters, was accused of murder and convicted and sentenced to life in prison. And Betty Ann knew that her brother didn't commit this crime. She had faith as only a sister could have. And she undertook a series of events which just really are amazing. She was a high school dropout. She went back and got her GED. She then went back and got her bachelor's degree. And she went to law school and became an attorney for the sole purpose of representing her brother in this criminal matter that he was wrongfully accused. And with the assistance of the Innocence Project and as his attorney, she uncovered evidence that was in a box in the courthouse basement that nobody had ever found before. And she used that DNA evidence that was in that box to conclusively prove that her brother was innocent of the charges of murder. And he, after spending 20 years in prison, 20 years on a wrongful charge, was released and exonerated completely.
Is that in Pennsylvania or where was it?
No, it was in Massachusetts.
Massachusetts.
Mm. Yeah. Ayers, A-Y-E-R-S, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but Ayers, Massachusetts, ended up paying this family $3.2 As only my producer Red Chris could do.
What he do?
It's airs. Thank you. Thank you, Red Chris. You are the genius behind the mic.
Mm-hmm.
So Ayers, Massachusetts paid $3.4 million to this family.
As they should have.
Yeah, I mean, well, listen.
If not more.
More, yeah, really. I mean,
20 years. God.
I'd want 3.4 per year.
In probably maximum security, life in prison, horrible, you know, just, oh, I can't even contemplate it.
So,
plus, how did he stay mentally, you know?
And here's the tragedy. This story ends tragically.
Uh-oh.
He's released from prison and 6 months later dies from a slip and fall accident.
God.
Oh, no.
Yes. Kenny Waters, 6 months later, was coming back from his brother's home, having had dinner, and was heading to his mom's house and falls off of a wall, took a shortcut, and trips and falls off of a wall and falls down like 15 feet and dies from his injuries.
Wow.
So,
I don't know what that says, but
that's horrible. It's
poor
it's,
Kenny.
Yeah, yeah. He was in Middletown, Rhode Island. I think I got that right, Red Chris. So the Innocence Project is an amazing group of individuals whose sole purpose is what, Bill?
Is to exonerate those that are wrongfully convicted. The Pennsylvania Innocence Project is recently started out of Temple Law School, your alma mater.
Yes, yeah, go Temple.
Go to you. However, I might add, put in a plug that Widener, also my alma mater, provides some professors that were there present at the boot camp.
Who go to Temple to, you know, to get schooled on
the,
how to do it.
If you were to Google or look up Innocence Project, you'll come across roughly, I think now up to 40 of the 50 states and even overseas. In essence, disregard whatever you see on television. As a former prosecutor in Florida and with the U.S. Attorney's Office, the reality of forensic medicine is far from what you see on CSI TV. Long before the recession, the states just aren't equipped. And
wait a second. I thought every forensic person in the state carries a gun, and they go out and actually personally investigate each case.
And 30 of them arrive at the scene of the crime.
Yeah, and they, you know.
And this is not a sexist comment. And the women are all wearing designer clothing.
Right, right.
Yeah. But the reality of the Innocence Project, and I'll just give you a few quick buzzes. We have a Pennsylvania. In 2004, Dean, Bruce Gottschalk walked out of a Pennsylvania prison 17 years after being wrongfully convicted of two rape charges. His exoneration was made possible through, I think you know David Radovinsky.
It's Radovsky.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very famous attorney at Temple, and also does a lot of
civil rights.
And some litigators from Pepper Hamill. The actual Pennsylvania version was just recently established. It operates out of Temple Law School. Marissa Bluestone is executive director. There's lots of contacts. But really, the key to it is, outside of the criminal justice system, as you know, you get a normal post-conviction appellate rights. What this process does is take volunteer attorneys, paralegals, and also volunteer journalists and investigators, and they break down cases. Stage one is just an informal review to see if it's valid. Two and three is more detailed. Putting together the case, and then stage four would actually include filing and maybe additional forensic testing.
Is it just DNA cases?
It's far beyond DNA.
Okay, so it's
the
not because we hear DNA and
you hear
think
DNA
it's always that.
And yes, clearly DNA and other testing, but the it even goes back to my days, and I was a prosecutor 20 years ago. Here's a stat for you. Of the 225 exonerations obtained through post-conviction DNA proceedings, and it does tie into DNA, there is a similar fact pattern, and this all goes back to criminal law procedure, back in your first law of law school. You ready? Sound familiar? Fabricated or coerced confessions, faulty forensic work, mistaken ID, often caused by suggestive police practices, false testimony from jailhouse informants, that's one of my favorites, and police and prosecutorial suppression of exculpatory evidence. Now, that last one confuses people. But as a former prosecutor, and Dean and David, you know this, it's basically you're very familiar with the civil rules of discovery and how open they are. But as a prosecutor, you have an affirmative duty, meaning you have to tell the other side when you have evidence that favors the defendant. And that still is probably, unfortunately, one of the – you get a case that has some political ramifications, even in local communities, a child rape or something horrible like that. Some evidence comes up that favors the alleged defendant, and it's buried. And I guess the case that comes to mind there that got a lot of publicity because the former lacrosse players from Duke –
right.
All had
sure.
assets and money to good private counsel. Not only was that case, I think, thrown out, but the head district attorney was disbarred.
Yeah.
But in a nutshell, and I'll turn it over to other questions, it's a project. It's largely – it is staffed by volunteer attorneys like myself. Dean Ken Edelin, the head of our criminal unit, is also a big player over there and sits on the board. I think you know a lot of the other attorneys, John Carroll. Many other prominent both civil and criminal attorneys. It's privately funded by private law firms and corporations, and the attorneys like myself volunteer our time to screen the cases. So if you have any other, just Google Innocence Project, Pennsylvania. If you're in the western part of the state, there's also with Duquesne Law School, Penn State Law School, and what's the other law school?
Pitt
also has a similar project. And
yes.
We use law students. That is the Innocence. The key to remember about the Innocence Project, it's separate from the court system. It's sort of like giving the criminal defendant another chance outside of the prosecution.
I will say this, Bill, that 48 of the states now mandate that individuals who have been convicted of a crime that they are entitled to get DNA evidence.
Correct.
And to have it tested at the cost of the state. The only two states are Oklahoma.
Alaska.
Wow.
Yeah, Judge Palin. Yeah.
Governor Palin. Well, ex-Governor Palin. One of her legacies, I guess.
Tying into that, too, now is the, quote, creation of a DNA data bank. Now, how reliable anything the federal government does, but if you are a criminal, if you are arrested, I think the procedure now, I believe in Pennsylvania, if you're arrested for certain crimes, they take a DNA test, and maybe this data bank will catch on.
So that could be used the other way, too.
You're right.
For discovering crimes. Yeah.
I have a couple of facts that I think are salient to this discussion. Currently, there's 200, as of yesterday, 244 post-conviction DNA exonerations in the United States' history. 244 individuals were sitting in jail for an average of 12 years. Mm. 12 years. On a crime they did not commit.
Wow.
And that's just horrendous.
Makes me think of the Shawshank Redemption, that movie, you know?
The Hurricane.
Yeah. The Hurricane, yep. All those,
Hurricane,
yeah.
Oh. Denzel Washington.
Just how do you deal with that?
In addition, 17 people had been sentenced to death before DNA proved their innocence and led to their release. Sentenced to death. 17 men were sitting on death row for a crime they never committed.
I guess we'll never know how many were actually put to death who may have been innocent.
Well, it's funny you should say that because I in this research, when I was doing it for the show, do you know who came up? Our faithful leader, well, our fellow shock jock, our fellow jock, Tom Joyner.
Mm. Really?
Tom had, and it's only 2 days ago. 2 days ago.
What's his involvement in
this? I'm going to tell you what his involvement is.
Yeah, he was on here talking about that.
Tom had two uncles, and his uncles were convicted of murdering a 73-year-old Confederate soldier.
Both of them were. Both of them?
Both of them were.
Okay.
In 1915.
Oh, boy.
And these uncles were convicted in like 4 days, and then immediately electrocuted.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And there was very, very, and these were black gentlemen in South Carolina in 1915 who did not receive a fair trial.
Obviously.
And in fact, after they were convicted, there were prominent white people in society who said they weren't guilty of the crime and begged the court to overturn the conviction. Even the court itself said they would have not found enough evidence to convict these people. But the jury, in this like mob mentality, convicted these two, and they were electrocuted. And Joyner, 2 days ago, was before the Board of Pardon and Parole in South Carolina and had their, posthumously, obviously, had their convictions overturned.
Wow.
And it was really a great day in South Carolina for them to admit the errors of their racist ways from the turn of the century. And so, you know, the answer is, David, there have been men and women
Put to death. Sure.
Illegally, unjustifiably, as a result of bad convictions.
It was the governor of Illinois who, I think, approximately 5 years ago or 6 years ago, suspended all pending executions in his state based upon empirical research that as much as 60% of those individuals in Illinois on death row were wrongfully convicted.
Wow. Mm.
So,
don't you think every state should actually do, like, in other words, stop executions until we can make sure, you know, like this Innocence Project, give every person on death row at least an opportunity to, let's determine if they're actually here properly or not.
It's a highly charged.
It's resources and money, but, you know.
I was a prosecutor in the state of Florida, and as you know, there are certain states where death means death. Yeah. Florida is one.
Yeah, Texas Florida's is one of them.
It's a highly charged political statement. Pennsylvania, as you know, Dean, when do you think the last when was the last defendant
executed?
Executed in the state of Pennsylvania.
In the 70s, I believe.
It was the famous 60s, it was the
early 70s.
Coal miner case. The union leader up in upstate Pennsylvania was executed. I can't.
What year?
I think it was in the 70s.
70s? Okay.
And so there's nothing wrong with that, in my opinion, but anyway.
So can the, depending on how old the case is or maybe not, can the families of people who've been executed file a wrongful death suit?
That's a very
good
question.
Wow, great question. Yeah. You stumped us on that for a second. I'm looking at, God.
Well, there's a wrongful death statutes are 2-year statutes.
But discovery rule type thing, right? I mean, you wouldn't know. I don't know.
I would say that if it's more than 2 years, it would be a difficult road to hoe.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention you'd be suing a commonwealth or a state entity.
Right, they have all sorts of immunities. And
well, you could do. I mean, listen, we permit suits against governments who wrongfully convict innocent
correct
people, mm-hmm, and in fact, many of the states in the union have statutes that permit a monetary damages automatically, right, for people who are wrongfully convicted. I think New Jersey provides double the amount of money you earned the year before your conviction for each year that you're in jail, or a minimum of $20,000. So if you were earning, let's say, $25,000 a year the year before your conviction, you could get $50,000 a year for each year you sit in jail. David and I talked about that. I mean,
it's a way to legislate down the damages.
Absolutely, because well, if you choose to go with that,
right,
then you're gonna let's say you get $20,000 a year, you're in jail for 20 years, you're gonna get $400,000.
$400,000 for 20 years of your life jail.
Yeah, that makes
wrongfully
a lot of sense. That makes a lot. But you can also agree not to pursue it in that fashion, but to sue the state and go for the full measure of your damages. Pennsylvania doesn't have a automatic civil penalty to the state for wrongful convictions. Mm-hmm. You must sue them and prove your case and prove your damages. Certainly, I'm of the opinion that if you're spending 1 year in jail, let alone an average of 12 years, you should be getting millions of dollars. Maybe because I represent plaintiffs, I understand the worth of a life, I think, better than those who want to pay somebody $20,000 a year. So anyway, right. I know we got a lot of calls here. Do we have?
Yeah, we do. We do.
Take one of them.
You're listening to Court Radio on 107.9 WRNB. Mike is calling in with a question. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question concerning the innocent group. If they strictly go for DNA and have a problem with dealing with mandatory language and practice issues, where, let's say, the truth-seeking officer of the court is on a certain, this is my opinion.
You sound familiar to me.
Certain familiar who I do?
Yeah, you do. You called earlier, didn't you?
I did.
We call you.
I did. Now, you didn't catch me. In good faith, I called back.
I know. Go ahead. Continue.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
The issue is this. I consider mandatory language and practice dealing with a truth-seeking officer that violates his truth-seeking officer disposition in court just as synonymous to a practicing doctor that operates on someone that robbed him or her, and they decide to operate to get revenge. It's illegal and constitutional. I want to know why the innocent groups don't jump on issues like that. Because there's no DNA.
Okay, hold on 1 second. Let people respond.
The answer is because there's only so much resources, and the limited dollars have to be spent in the best way possible, Michael. And
plus, that sounds so specific, whereas this is more of a global issue that seems to be permeating the entire country.
Yeah,
but thanks. Much easier to develop. You know?
Michael, being a loyal Court Radio listener, mm-hmm. thanks for calling back and have a great Sunday. Let's take another call.
All right. In just a few moments, just to remind you, you are listening to Court Radio on 107.9 WRNB. If you're sitting at home and you're listening to us and you're wondering what to do if you've been injured from an automobile accident, slip and fall, work-related mishap, or medical negligence, call the attorneys at Silvers, Langsam, and Weitzman, better known as MyPhillyLawyer.com. Don't you give it a second thought. You can call for a consultation. Remember, they don't get paid until you get paid. They have over 100 years of combined experience. Let them aggressively fight for you. Just call them tomorrow morning at 215-227-2727 or visit their informative website at MyPhillyLawyer.com. Can't wait till tomorrow. Now is the time. 215-263-1079. Mr. Will is calling in from Philadelphia with a question. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio. Hey, Mr. Will.
Mr. Will.
I guess Mr. Right. Will had to go. Daryl is calling in from Philadelphia with a question.
Daryl.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, Daryl. Good morning. You're live on the air.
Good morning. How you doing? Y'all make it hard to ask the questions after listening to the Innocent Project. So let me ask the first question that I started out
with. We can only do one question, sir.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
Okay.
Question.
Go ahead.
But anyway, my son had an accident a few days ago. He was driving home about 10:30 at night. And he was traveling on Shelton Avenue, and a U-Haul cut in front of him to make a U-turn, and it was like a hit-and-run. His cousin was following behind him. Seeing the accident, my son was knocked out in the car. He was, you know, a little seriously injured. My cousin followed the U-Haul for about 2 blocks to try to get some identification on the truck. He got the license plate. When the police came, he gave the police the information of the U-Haul truck, but he gave the police a phony name because he was scared. He really didn't want to get involved with it. So now the question is, when something like that happened, he feels though he's scared to testify or to give any other statements because he thinks that some legal issues might come against him because he gave a phony name. What actions would be the right thing for him to do?
Well, I don't think anything bad will occur as a result of that, and mistakes are made at the scene of an accident. My main concern is that they identify who the U-Haul is. That information is of utmost importance, and perhaps he won't need to be involved as a witness at this point. We'll just have to see how things play out once U-Haul is notified that one of their vehicles was involved in this accident. And if, you know, at this point, we don't know, and it's possible that the U-Haul vehicle was stolen, that it was taken without permission, it wasn't under contract at the time. There's so many factors that may, you know, knock this case out of the ballpark to some extent if there's not an insurance company or a party or a corporation that will stand behind the actions of that truck and the driver of it. But then the question then is whether your son has insurance on his car and whether he has something called uninsured motorist, which is, you know, a type of coverage I try to stress to the listeners of Court Radio all the time to make sure you have. Because had, let's assume for a moment that the identity of that U-Haul truck was never made known, how do you get paid to for your son's injuries? How do you get paid for the repair of your vehicle if you're not properly covered yourself? And the answer is you won't. Unless we provide for ourselves, nobody will provide for us in those circumstances. And the way to provide for yourself is to have uninsured motorist coverage. Then if you're hit by somebody who takes off on you, or if you're hit by somebody who doesn't have insurance, you're covered. Your insurance company says, okay, we'll step in as if we were the party at fault, and we'll pay you. We'll pay you all your damages, and we'll go after this deadbeat or this unknown party if we can find them. There's questions I'd have, but what I would suggest to you is to call the office as soon as you get off the phone and leave a message with your name and telephone number. The number is 215-227-2727, and that way we'll be able to discuss the facts and what your rights are, and before you give up your rights, we'll tell you what they are, and then you'll be able to participate in that process.
Okay, thank you. That's what I'll do.
All right.
All right. Thank you so much for your call. We have Tony calling in from Nicetown with a question. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
How you doing? I have a problem. I've been looking for a job. As everybody knows, job market is really hard. And I've just found out that I had a criminal record about 15 years ago. And I just found out that this company that most companies look at was saying that I was still on parole and that I was did other crimes that I didn't do. Now, I called the state of Texas. They said it's not on there. It's that company that's doing the mistake, and it's taking me loops and holes to try to correct this. What can I do about this?
Well, okay. I think in what you're saying is, and you can correct me, that there's some independent company that does a criminal background check. And
yeah,
that they got it wrong in their process, and they've got information that does not belong to you that they're attributing to you. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then I think you'd have a cause of action against this private company who's doing a criminal background check if they've negligently attributed a crime to you that you didn't commit, and that's preventing you from getting a job. Then you may have a cause of action.
It's almost like
them.
Defamation in a way, right?
Yes.
They defamed him.
Mm-hmm. So
you should get your record directly from Texas, from the entity that can certify your what record they have of your criminal background, and then match it.
I've done that, and
okay.
I've even faxed it to them, and they said they had to do their own research.
Okay.
All right. Well, then now it's time to see an attorney, I think, and bring with you your certified criminal record from Texas showing what it was what crimes you've committed. Now, of course, the company, the employer ultimately can say, well, even if you weren't on parole, just the mere fact that you had a conviction 15 years ago will prevent you from getting a job with us. And so that's always a possibility as well. So I'm not telling you that you definitely can prove your damages, because the damage part is the key here. If you've been defamed, you have to show that the defamation caused you some injury. And if the company could, if you could get something from the company that said, hey, we would have hired you had we known you were merely convicted of some crime 15 years ago. We didn't hire you because we were told by this independent company that you were still on parole. And if we knew you weren't still on parole, we would have given you your job. The job maybe that they've given to somebody else now. Now you start to develop some damages that sounds like we could, be successful in a courtroom on your behalf. But more to talk about, call the office 215-227-2727 and make sure you have your certified criminal record before you do that. Have a great day, sir.
I appreciate it.
All right.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Well, we're getting close to the end of the show. We might want to wrap things up and say a few more words about the Innocence Project.
Well, my Philly lawyer is 100% behind the Innocence Project. We got Ken Edelin, who sits on the board, and we've got Bill Hobson, who's volunteering. And, we're in addition to doing a fine job on civil matters, personal injury, medical malpractice, and serious construction accident cases. We are also developing a very fine criminal defense representation at My Philly Lawyer, and these fellows are serious about representing people who have been convicted of crimes. Bill, when somebody, when a family member wants to maybe open a case for somebody who's been wrongfully convicted, how would they start that process with the Innocence Project in less than 60 seconds?
215-204-4255. 215-204-4255 is a direct dial to the Innocence Project, which is housed at the Temple University Beasley School of Law, or just go online, www.innocenceprojectpennsylvania.
All right. There you have it, folks. Another great show for Court Radio.
Fantastic. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you. My pleasure.
As always, it's great to see you each and every week. But please don't touch that dial. We have Philly Speaks with E. Stephen Collins coming up next. Much love going out to our producer, Red Chris, who always does an amazing job.
Airs. So,
who is definitely. Yeah, airs. Airs. Thank you, Red Chris.
Awesome. All right. Philly Speaks with E. Stephen Collins is up next. Have a peaceful, positive, and productive day. Bye-bye.